And welcome back to Hip to Be a Square podcast, your place for things quilty and geeky. Today is Friday, September 27th. This is episode 148, I believe. And I am joined today with special guest Jay, who we all know is Art Quilt Maker.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Pam. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, sure. Happy to have you. So Jay and I are going to do things a little different than my previous guest podcast, simply because I don't have that much other life junk and feedback to talk about. So we are going to spend some time talking about inspiration now that we are crotchety old quilters ourselves. I mean, I am. I don't want to speak for Jay.
I have been described as crotchety on occasion.
I'm pretty sure I was crotchety when I was like 7. So, you know, we'll just throw old out. Experienced okay. Crotchety quilters. There you go. Okay. So, fitness update. I don't know. You know, still exercising. Realized that I have been not counting as many calories for my popcorn as I needed to. But, you know, I've still been losing weight, so not that big a deal.
Hey, it wasn't caramel covered.
No, it's Orville Redenbacher Simply Salted, which
yeah, so I'd yeah. just be okay with that.
And then I have, because I don't know, apparently I need to be bloated, I have like butter flavored salt that I also sprinkle on top.
Oh, that stuff.
that makes me drink a lot more water.
That's a bonus.
Yeah, so I don't do that daily, but I was looking, you know, serving sizes, and they always get you like 2.5 servings per bag. Well, okay, but then they're like total box, 7 servings, but there's 3 bags, and then that's too much math. So, oh well. But anyway, I
hate that when they have something that you open and mm-hmm. it's not one serving, it's 5 servings.
Exactly.
It's just wrong.
And especially like 2.5 servings. Well, what? What am I giving a handful to the dog and splitting it? You know, I don't know what they expect.
That's like
to
the 2.5 children.
Well, technically I have like 2 and 4 halves, you know, if you count the cats and the dogs. And
well, yeah. But you know that statistic where they say, oh, yeah.
3.2.
Yes, I have 0.2 of a child. Thank you.
Maybe they're counting husbands as like half a child.
Oh, that's a good point.
That could be.
That's a good point. I have to think about that.
So, yeah, otherwise, yeah, fitness, there you go. Still running from zombies. Seems to be working. Had to buy new pants. Kind of exciting, except then I spent money on pants last year that now are too big. And first world problem, my pants are too big because I'm losing weight. And then I just sound like a big jerk. So, sorry.
You know, maybe there should be an exchange, a weight loss exchange, so people who just bought new pants can go and exchange them for other people's new pants.
Yes. It's exciting. I mean, like, because pants feel like a big investment. Because you got to go to the store, you got to try them on. I mean, even if you mail order them, you got to try them on. Sometimes you got to send them back. So you tend to stick with the same pants, even if you fluctuate in size a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I found with underwear, I'm just going to hang in there until they're just ratty, and I shouldn't wear them anymore for the sake of, you know, being found in them in an accident. So that's been nice to be like, well, time to buy new underwear because I can, and yes, they will fit and not, you know, have weird elastic happening on one side, you know. So I'm sure this is scintillating podcasting conversation, and you probably didn't think we'd be talking about underwear.
I did not, but
well, there you go.
I'm going with flow.
Every day is an adventure, Jay.
That's right.
Well, let's move on. So don't have a lot of feedback to discuss because I just posted an episode on Monday. And I appreciate that I made Quilt and Jenny laugh really hard about a funeral, but it is true that my aunt and my grandma Eddie, you know, went and did their funeral arrangements together and then went for Frosties. So, you know, we're just fun like that, my family, I guess. But we have,
well,
yeah.
I have to tell you a funny story about making funeral arrangements.
Okay.
So my father-in-law died 10 years ago, kind of unexpectedly, and no, we did all the normal stuff, funeral arrangements. It was all kind of really quick because we didn't know. Mm-hmm. So then the following Easter, that was in May, And then the following Easter, we're all sitting around. My husband has five siblings, so there's a lot of us at Easter. The kids are in the back. There's 13 of them. That's an added bonus. But they weren't at the table. So we all, our plates are kind of shoved away. We're all loosening our pants and drinking wine. And my mother-in-law says to us, okay, we need to talk about condos or land. My mother-in-law is a wonderful person, but we're all looking around at each other going, what is she talking about? She has a perfectly fine house. We all have perfectly fine houses. What is she talking about? She goes, I need to put your father somewhere, and I want to know if you guys want a condo or land, because he doesn't want to be alone, and I'm buying space for everybody. So then, at this family dinner, we proceed to discuss the merits of those little drawers in the wall where you can put ashes.
Yes.
Or whether we're all going to be in the ground, and how much space we would need. And I mean, I know some of your listeners are going, oh my God, I can't believe she's talking about this, but it was so hilarious. I mean, we were roaring with laughter at this conversation. And
We had similar discussion after the funeral, because the open casket thing, like, I don't want that for me, and I don't want my kids to have to do that. And, like, my whole family sat around and decided, you know, where we all wanted to be sprinkled afterwards, because we're like, well, we don't, it feels like an obligation and people feel differently. I know Tori made a comment about she can't really handle cremation, but, you know, and the whole expecting someone to come and maintain a graveside.
Yeah.
And I get that there's a place to go and feel a connection, but I mean, for my loved ones, I feel a connection with them in different situations, you know, when I'm sewing or when I'm eating a particular food that I know they enjoyed, you know, the mocha frappe, like the priest had to say at her mass. So we were all like, well, you know what, you know, just sprinkle me somewhere fun. Let's just take me back to Bora Bora. You know, you'll get a little vacation out of it. You know, my husband is really bad. He's like, just put me in a black garbage bag and set me on the curbside because I'll be dead. I won't know. I'm like, I don't think I could do that. But I'm like, how about I just take you to Bora Bora because I want to go back.
Well, I don't know about Georgia, but it's illegal to put
body
remains in the garbage, just as an aside.
I mean, you can't put empty paint cans out. So I imagine, yeah, bodies are frowned upon too.
Yeah, but I think it's really, you know, people don't talk about death in our society, and
yeah.
No, you don't want to dwell on it, but, you know, having some idea of what's going to happen to you is a little bit comforting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be dead, so I don't really care, but at least I know that my husband's not going to have to worry about it.
Yeah, and they're not going to be the burden and the, you know, now we have to go back to this other state we don't live in to take care of a great, yeah, so, yeah,
and
I'm sorry for making anyone uncomfortable, but you know what? We talk about stuff.
Yeah, it's life.
Yeah.
So go home and talk about it at Easter so everybody knows what's happening.
That is a perfect religious occasion because I'm pretty sure none of us are going to be rising again unless it's a zombie apocalypse, in which case that's a whole other problem.
That's true.
So, Tori, I'm sorry that we had to talk about cremation, but we did give her the bobblehead. As I was talking about the mass and the, you know, oh, yeah, remember that? Nodding, yes, yes.
Yeah, the bobblehead, that's very popular at funerals.
Now, completely unrelated to funerals, I mean, semi-related, about the death of pumpkins. Amy, AJ Dub, had commented that soaking your pumpkin in cold water with a little bleach or spray it will help preserve it. Or, like, smear Vaseline on the cut parts, and that just made me think you're taking soft lighting photographs of your pumpkin and smearing Vaseline on the lens. Like, you know, I can't even get my kids to help scoop the guts out, so I'm really not inclined to make this piece of art that we can all sit around and look at for extra periods of time. But if you are so inclined and have that sort of family dynamic where you all gather around the lit pumpkin and really enjoy it, feel free. But no, I'm just going to chuck mine in the woods.
Where there's probably like a mutant colony of pumpkins growing.
Now, we took a lot of stuff in the woods. Because our lot is like an acre, and the back half of it is wooded, and we can chuck things from our back deck into the woods. And so, you know, rotten fruit, we chuck apples, oranges, whatnot. Sunday mornings when there's like pancakes and waffles and there's that extra bit of batter, and so there's enough for like one not quite full-sized waffle, the kids fight over who gets to frisbee it out in the backyard, and then inevitably I see some squirrel in the afternoon trying to carry off an entire waffle, stepping on it. It's very hilarious. So there's a lot to be said for chucking things out in the woods. I mean, at least assuming you live in, you know, not an urban setting. Because I could see
it doesn't work so well for us.
Yeah, don't chuck waffles out your door, Jay. That's probably not going to work good for you.
Yeah, not really. So I was gonna say about pumpkin. So we had to put my son in charge of holiday decorations because I am way too busy sewing and my husband just is not into decorating. So my son is kind of bad about it for most holidays, but at Christmas, his birthday is on November 30th. So he'll say, okay, tomorrow's the day, we're getting the tree tomorrow. And even if he's not home, we have to do it because we get in trouble and he's allowed to punish us within reason if we don't do it. Because one year I went at 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve and got the tree and decorated it. It was, my butt was in mass at 4.
Oh.
So you can imagine it wasn't a great tree and the decorating job sucked, but hey, we have a tree. Santa could put gifts under it.
Yeah, our tree always looks the same. We have a fake tree because that's just sort of what I grew up with. And the one year I was pregnant with my son, I was like, let's get a real tree. Or no, it was the year before that. The year I was pregnant with my son, we didn't put anything up. We just pulled out the little people, Fisher-Price little people nativity scene and like set it under the TV. And that was our Christmas decorations because like, I was 8 months pregnant and having none of that. And last year we didn't put anything up because we had, you know, just gotten kittens and a dog and we weren't going to be in town. I was like, we're not decorating. I hope you guys can get over that. And everyone's like, all right. And it was so nice because we didn't have that stress of like putting stuff up is kind of fun. But then, I mean, my family, my mom is like, all right, everyone's open gifts. Let's take the tree down. The next day, it's all down.
My mother-in-law likes to tell a story about how their tree was still up at St. Patrick's Day and that she drew the line at St. Patrick's Day.
We had a near Valentine's Day Christmas tree incident at my in-law's house because my mother-in-law goes nuts. She has, I think she's up to like 14 Christmas trees in her house. She she's got four bedrooms, five bedrooms, so the master and then four others because there were four boys. So each of those rooms has a different theme. There's like the patriotic tree room and then the snowman tree room and then, you know, and so the travel tree room. So, and then there's like one at the end of the hall and one in the kitchen and two in the living room, one in the dining room, one in the basement because you need to have your own Christmas tree when you're playing pool down there, I guess. And one in the sewing room. And then they put
The gambling tree in the basement.
I think that's like where the ornaments that don't fit any other theme get shoved down there, I think.
But not gambling.
Sure. No, not really. And no one really plays pool. She just uses it to lay out quilt tops. So it's like, all right. And yeah, but they go a little nuts. And they had like a big manger. And she found, I don't know, this is questionable, I think. There's an eclectic mix of styles. And so she had like the big plastic figures for the nativity scene. And at a liquor store one year, they had these neon palm trees to promote some sort of maybe Corona or some beer. And she's like, oh, those would look really good on the nativity scene. And so now she's got these neon palm trees that go. And she's like, I really wish we had a stable or something. And so a couple of years ago, we made her one. But because of those stupid neon palm trees, I put a hook in it and hung a little disco ball ornament from it.
Oh, I remember.
The baby Jesus Havana Hotspot. They still put it up, but they don't put the disco ball on anymore. I'm not quite sure where it ended up. She just sort of hangs a little holly bow up, or sprig of holly up there now. And I was like, That's still a little
She probably lost it, and I'm doing those little air quotes around the lost.
I think it's just ended up on a different tree because, you know, there's 15 trees. And she has like a whole department 56 village, you know, ugh, with remote control to turn it on and off.
Department 56?
Those little ceramic houses, like at Macy's, they have them. But she's got like the Dickens village, so it's a little more Victorian looking, you know, ceramic houses and Fezziwig's parlor and the little ice skating pond with a magnet under it so the little people skate around. And then there's fake snow. And, oh, it's a big thing. She starts putting those up before Thanksgiving. So I can see where you put that much stuff up. You're going to leave it up because, by golly, that's a lot of manpower to put into it.
Yeah, no kidding. And then there's me with the kid who's the boss. We call him the Christmas boss.
I feel like I need to, like, maybe pick a theme each year and just rotate out certain things because I have – the trouble I run into is, you know, there's things – my grandfather was a woodworker, and so I've got things that he made and painted that I want to have up. And then, you know, your kids do some stuff that isn't too jacked up you kind of want to look at. Or you did something to it to make it less jacked up because there's always like handprint angels and you're like, oh, honey, that's so nice. And then I just, it's like, well, let me put a border on that and quilt it. It looks much
better.
So I've got some of that stuff. And then the problem we used to have in my husband's family, because he's the youngest of four. And then, you know, they're all married and now some of them have adult kids and you would have to like give a gift to, you know, we would draw names.
Yeah, we do
so
that.
So I would get like a sister-in-law. Okay, well, I don't know what she wants, or, you know, I know she's got hot chili pepper theme in her kitchen. Well, you don't want to get her chili pepper tea towels for the fourth year in a row. So you're like, well, I'll just get her a holiday decoration, and then she only has to look at it once a year. And so then you end up with all this extra holiday stuff that you didn't really pick out, and it's nice enough, but it's not really your thing. And so yeah, there's like extra junk that I
What we do, we have a Yahoo group for my husband's family. Again, there's six kids, and they all have siblings, and now some adults. And we send each other lists, and you have to buy something off the list.
We started last year doing, like, a not quite a white elephant exchange, but like Yankee Christmas or Yankee Santa. I don't. There's different names for it. So everyone draws a number. Everyone brings a thing. And so number one gets to pick a gift. The second person can either take that gift or pick something else that's wrapped.
Yeah.
And that worked out because we get like one of my sister-in-law, also named Pam, like works at Honey Baked Ham. And so she always brings a ham. People fight over the ham, you know. And I have a niece that sells 31 bags. And so she'll have a thing. You know, I made it like a quilted table topper and a wine bag. And so, you know, then you can kind of pick like, well, I will go for the, you know, emergency car repair kit because, hey, that could be useful instead of a ham or something. So that helped last year and made it a little more fun.
Yeah, if people get good gifts, if it's white elephant, like, you know, the violet tissue holder.
Yeah, we kind of decided it wouldn't be like the wacky junk, like novelty toilet paper, none of that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, maybe something out of your gift closet that you were given that is still new, that is not your thing, but it's nice enough.
Yeah.
We kind of agreed that, no, don't bring your weird, I don't know, novelty, whatever. So it worked out last year. We're totally off track now, by the way.
I know, sorry.
Anyway, thank you also, Kati, for commenting, and sorry for that discourse. So, yes, Whip Wednesday, Kati also is the only one that commented there, so thank you. And quick PSA, I had put in my Whip Wednesday post that the Tricky Stars quilt that I had made, that's the Bonnie Hunter Cathedral Stars pattern, is being raffled off for Good Muse in October, and there is actually a way to buy tickets online that I was going to post the link to how to buy the raffle tickets if anyone was interested in getting a chance to win the Tricky Stars quilt. And that raffle is going to be on October 6th. And the tickets are like a dollar for two, or, you know, and then escalating if you donate $20, you can get 100 chances.
Wow. Okay, people, send your 20s to Pam.
No, not to me. You send it to the shelter. No. Then you get a receipt for taxes. Yes.
Follow the directions on her website. Yes. Buy those tickets. They take PayPal, right?
Yes, they do, I believe. Should be PayPal, and it's like you go through their donate form on their website. So I know I've done like credit card and been fine. But they might also do PayPal. Yeah. instructions will be out there. All right. So that is all the feedback that I had to discuss.
I'm sorry. I was taking care of Grandma. I couldn't.
Oh, that's fine.
I'm so behind on everything.
That was not a judgment on you or anyone else. It was because I hadn't posted that much this week.
You were busy too.
I was busy. Yeah, it's wacky time at school. We just got back from fall break, and teacher breakfast was this morning, and fourth grade is expected to sort of cater that and take things in. And then also fall festival for the school is next week. And so there's like a bajillion things I have to nag people about as a room mom. And I think we just have like a Slack group of parents in my son's class because they're not responding at all. I'm like, do you hear the words coming out of my mouth? No, they don't. So, and then I get nagged by the PTA.
Anyone who responds gets a chance to win the Tricky Stars quilt.
I'm not buying those people tickets.
Oh. Well, you could just buy 20 and then.
Yeah, that's true.
If one of them wins, then.
I could just tell them I bought them tickets and they wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
you know what? You'll be happy when your kids get to high school because the high school people are like, thank you for dropping off your boy and your check. See ya. And
yeah.
They don't really want you to be around. No room parents, none of that.
Yeah, and it's not like the teacher himself is asking for a lot of help. He's sort of like, you know, we're teaching responsibility and whatnot. But the PTA is still like, oh, we need you to drop off a cake for the cakewalk and an auction item and get your business to sponsor this thing and come staff a booth for the lollipop tree and buy wristbands so your kids can go in the bounce houses.
There's not even a PTA in high school.
Yeah, I'm on the one hand, it's like, oh, I can't believe that I'll have a middle schooler in a couple of years, but it'll be nice not to be nagged about all this junk.
Yeah. Yeah. You do still have to sell a lot of stuff.
Yeah. We had to do that in band. We always sold like oranges.
Oranges?
Yeah, I grew up in Virginia. We don't grow oranges there. We were selling Florida oranges in Virginia. At least we weren't selling ham. There was a lot of ham because it was close to Smithfield.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. And then we did like M&Ms, which we would just sell to other people in our class or just buy them yourself.
Yeah, no, we have to sell 10 bags of coffee. So I can hook you up if anybody needs coffee.
I did click through and look at that, and I was like, oh, coffee. I'm like, I have like one cup a day, and I use it in my Keurig, so I didn't know. I'm like,
Yeah, I know, and I don't drink coffee really, so.
Well, they have hot cocoa, Jay, I saw, and cookie mix.
Yeah, I know, but I have to pay attention to what's in it, and usually those hot cocoa
with the gluten.
Yeah,
cookies especially are not gluten-free.
Oh, yeah. Cookies, no,
yeah, you're
gluten.
Allergic to all the things that I like. Gluten,
yeah.
Cilantro, wine.
Vinegar.
Vinegar.
Just red wine.
Just the
red wine.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I had to promise Jay that I would not have any of those things on the podcast, physically touching her.
She's doing very well so far, everyone.
So far, yeah. I haven't shoved a piece of bread through the microphone yet.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You'll probably hear when I do.
Probably. Do you have sound effects too? You know, like on Garrison Keillor's?
Oh, I told Darla at one point I was going to steal the little marching ants thing because I thought that was a hoot, but I haven't yet.
It's never too late.
I know.
150's coming. You can say, after 150, I'm doing sound effects.
I'm going to have a board and there's going to be boing noises everywhere. It's going to be awesome.
Ooga. Yeah,
all kinds of stuff.
You're going to be even more famous than you already are.
Oh, geez. I don't know if I can handle it.
Okay, let's move on before we become.
Let's talk about our actual topic.
Okay.
So, inspiration. Not just for crusty, experienced quilters like ourselves. Because the question that I posed to Jay was, all right, as a more experienced quilter, where, you know, how does your inspiration and where it comes from grow and change over time? Because as a new quilter, it's like, oh, I like that quilt. There's a kit for it. I will buy it and make it exactly as shown. And
I
sometimes do that now. But how has that changed for you, Jay?
Well, when I first started out, there were no kits. And there weren't fabric lines and none of that. So I, you know, color is a big one. But I thought about that question after you posed it, and what I realized is that the most important thing that I've developed is actually seeing things. So, for example, when you go to a quilt show, now you might go to a quilt show to be with your friends and chat about whatever, catch up, or you might go to a quilt show to look at the quilts. Well, if you're going to the quilt show to look at the quilts, look at the quilts. Don't walk by, don't do drive-bys. Stand in front of the quilt. You don't have to do this for all of them. I mean, you can, I usually do a drive-by on all the quilts and then go back and really look at the ones that I like. But stand in front of it for more than 30 seconds and look at the piecing, look at the stitching, put your nose up to the quilting. See, try and figure out what appeals to you. Is it just the color? That's the most in your face part of a quilt, I think.
Yeah.
Is the color, but there's other stuff too. And I've talked about this on Sandy's podcast a little bit, like the ratio of colors to each other is really important, because you might go, ugh, I hate yellow quilts, but then you go and you see a yellow quilt with a little bit of blue in it. Blue is the complement of yellow. And you might go, oh, that really works. And if you spend time looking at it, then you can figure those things out. And taking pictures is good, but it's not as good as actually looking at stuff, because you just can't get the color right. At least I can't. I mean, Katie is a whiz at her DSLR, but me, I just have a point and shoot. It really does take good pictures, but I'm too lazy to mess around with the color.
Yeah. And I think, too, a lot of the texture, either from the quilting or from, you know, if there's special elements, sometimes there's like folded pieces and then there's crystals or bling or something, and you don't, you can't capture that in a photograph typically.
Yeah.
Or capture it
really
well.
It really flattens them out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really flattens them out. That's a very good point. But, you know, you get inspiration from everywhere. And I have this sort of personal 365 project where I take a picture of the same thing every morning at around the same time. And it just makes me look at it differently. I see it every day. It's part of the landscape, but it forces me to really look. Looking and seeing are different than just walking to work.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I know you walk up your stairs, but you get the idea. And I mean, look at the world around you. Stop thinking about, oh, when I get off the train, I've got to make dinner as soon as I get home and make sure I write the check for the bassoon teacher and whatever, and look at what's around you, the cracks on the sidewalk and or the crazy flower print moo-moo of the lady walking in front of you. Try and find inspiration around you, because even if you're not going to reproduce that flower print moo-moo, you might like the shape of one of the flowers.
So basically you're walking around pretending you're in a inspiration challenge for Project Runway all the time?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you keep a notebook with you to sketch, or do you typically rely on digital media, like you have your camera phone or something?
All of the above.
All of it?
I have a little sketchbook, because if I'm sketching, if I see a block or something that could be a block, I want to sketch it out. I guess I could take a picture, but then I have to sketch it out anyway, just to kind of become one with the piecing of it.
Yeah.
But I love, the best invention ever is a camera in your phone. I swear. First world problems. I know not everybody has that. Sketching is perfectly fine. I did it for years, but just taking a picture of it. Oh my God. It's great. Because then when you're standing in line at the post office or the DMV, you can scroll through your gallery and go, oh yeah, I remember that. You know, I'm ready for a new quilt and I'm going to use this color scheme or this. These shapes as my inspiration. And it's just, it's the best ever. I love my camera.
Now, do you have any, because I know there's different apps for like photo manipulation or, you know, extract the five major colors from a particular photo. Do you have any of those apps, or do you just rely straight on the pictures?
Oh, I have a lot of them. I never use them.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I should put that on there. And I never use it.
Yeah, that's me. I have, let's see, there's one called something like Photo IRCS. I read about it somewhere. I thought it sounded like a good idea. Never used it. multi-lens camera. Read about it somewhere. Thought it'd be a good idea. Never use it. Maybe I should try it. Because actually, one thing that I have tried is turning things into black and white. Mm-hmm. And that's really good to see contrast. So if you're trying to pick out colors for a quilt and you're having trouble, then take a picture, turn it into black and white, and then you can see where things blend together. Now, you might want the colors and the fabrics to blend together, but you might not. And if you know which fabrics blend with which other fabrics, you can move them around so they're not touching. Mm-hmm. So that I do use. And I really should try some of these other things, but again, I guess lazy isn't the right word. It's more no time and I don't think about it.
Yeah, I feel like when you already have a pile up of ideas, adding more new ideas on top of that gets almost overwhelming and sort of paralyzing.
Well, yeah, it can. But the way I think about it is, oh, I have this big pile up of ideas. I love that phrase, by the way. And here's this new idea. Oh, it's overwhelming me. Well, maybe I can take part of it and put it in with this other idea.
Okay.
I mean, I have a gazillion quilts in my head, and they've got to get in line, but that doesn't stop me from making a quilt a second time. And sometimes making a quilt a second time, like you did with Easy Street, mm-hmm. it gets it right in your head. Mm-hmm. I mean, right, again, in air quotes. I think it. Sometimes I just need to work through something that didn't quite work in the other one. And that's how I do it. I don't know if that's inspiring, but.
Well, I think it is. I mean, when I did the second version of Easy Street, part of me was like, that's a cool pattern. I'm giving away the first one as a gift. So if it's a cool pattern, I want to keep it around. I should make one for me. And then I combined that idea with, well, I was looking around at my stash, like, I don't know what fabrics to put in there. And my friend Lynn, who's been on the podcast before, was giving a lecture on color at our guild. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the challenge, we kind of agreed, you know, I was helping her flush out some ideas ahead of time and sort of agreed that, you know, okay, well, let's have everyone bring a piece of ugly fabric. And then I had just helped her cut up a lot of her scraps to organize them. And she was going to bring all of her scrap squares. And the challenge was going to be take your ugly fabric and find, you know, 3 to 5 of those scrap squares that would work with it. And I tend to fall into the granimals idea of quilt planning where I'm just going to match solids because it's easy and then I don't have to worry about prints clashing and looking weird. And so I had picked out my ugly fabric, which was that sheep fabric that ultimately was the inspiration. And then I started looking at my stash like, you know what? A lot of these same colors are in these other fabrics that I have. And here's this other crazy fabric that I like, but I didn't think went, but when I put it next to all the other teals and purples, it really goes. And it was that combination of, hey, there's this pattern I like and want to do for me, and this ugly quilt color theory idea. And that's when those came together and poof, now I have a king size quilt.
Yeah. And it's just making connections and trying things. And it's so much easier just to take a fabric line and make a quilt from it. But if you take out, I like to say, take out 20% of that line and replace it with something else. Mm-hmm. And then you have your own quilt. It doesn't look like everybody else's, even if you're making the kit. And that is really hard and it takes time. I mean, I've been trying to pick out 40 fabrics for a Jelly Roll trademark, Moda, that I'm trying to make. And it's hard. It's not that easy. I have a lot more respect for those designers who churn out 3 lines a year. Ginny Beyer, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing. But it's also really good because I'm looking at these octagons that I have on my wall and all these different crazy fabrics, and it does go together. probably could use a few more solids, but I still have 20 fabrics to find, so I think I can stick some solids in there. Mm-hmm. And even though the reds aren't quite matchy-matchy and there's a couple different purples, it works. And I did it. So that is kind of inspiring, too, because once you achieve success, even a very small success, then you're like, oh, I can do that. Let me try this. Mm-hmm. And I guess that goes back to why I do quilts more than once also. If I can, I mean, I don't have all the time in the world, but, you know, you get it.
Yeah. I was talking to Lynn just last night. We were on our way back from another guild meeting, and we were talking about how the push for the modern movement lots of times is focusing on using, you know, the prepackaged pre-cuts. Mm-hmm. But your quilt can look like everyone else's, and it kind of looks flat because they're all mediums. There's not a lot of contrast between the patterns even. You know, maybe you need to throw a stripe in there, but there's not one in the line. So what do? You know,
yeah,
throw a stripe in there anyway.
And it's okay to add your own fabric. Mm-hmm. It's okay to deviate from what everyone else is doing. If you need permission, now you have it. Seriously, I mean, some people won't do it because, oh, what if I get in trouble? Well, who's going to get you in trouble?
Yeah, we don't allow the quilt police on here.
Yeah, and who are the quilt police anyway? I want to know. If anybody is a quilt police who listens to this podcast, could you please leave a comment on my blog? I want to ask you some questions.
I would like to know their licensing organization.
Well, yeah, that's one of the questions. And the thing I always get on my quilts is your binding isn't filled. Okay, I need to know what that means. How do I do that? What does it mean? Because they just said your binding hasn't been filled. Well, show me how to do that. Okay.
I know what that means. So because we've had the organizer for the East Cobb Quilters Guild show who picks, you know, the judges came to the Atlanta Modern Quilt Guild and was talking about, you know, what happens in a quilt show and how are things juried and how is the judging done. And she's like, there's always one judge that's like the binding judge, and that's just their thing. And, you know, the binding not being filled means when you like feel the binding, you shouldn't have a place where the binding kind of compresses and you can't feel the quilt in there. So the parts of the quilt have to go all the way to the edge where that fold is of the binding. Otherwise, like, because maybe your quilt, when you trimmed it, there was like a little jacked up area. I've had this happen, and you ended up, whoops, trimmed a little too much. And so you're like, well, the binding's going to cover that. But when you enter things for judging, I mean, they will feel the binding. They're examining your mitered corners. They're checking to see, you know, did you take your extra stitch at the corner? So it lies nice and flat, you know, and when they're feeling it, you know, is the binding look straight or is it kind of wavy? And when they feel it, is it filled up all the way with the quilt or did you, you know, attach it too close to the edge? You know, is it even on both sides? So, I mean, that's what it being filled means.
Oh, see? Everybody learned something, including
there
me.
There you go. Holla.
Yeah, but they should tell people. I mean, don't just say that and never tell people how to do that.
Well, they are probably tired of being the binding judge, but that's now their thing. And then they can't bother to explain it because clearly you pedestrians don't get it. Who was I talking to? It was something about Allison was just talking about it on QuiltCon and the judging commentary that they had there and having like a fabric designer and a shop owner judge quilts was kind of a little wacky because they could judge the aesthetics of it, but not necessarily the technical construction. Like, I don't think they knew to feel the binding and tell people it wasn't full.
No. As Francis would say, the muggles aren't going to know.
They're not. And Rashida makes quilts. I mean, I've taken a quilt class from her. But, you know, when it comes to, like, certified judges, they are typically certified appraisers that then go on to pursue, you know, a career in quilt judging. Yeah. And then there's maybe, like, in the show that we have here for the East Cobb Guild, there's, like, I think there's three judges total. And you might have like two sort of professional judges and maybe like one celebrity judge, like a shop owner or a designer or something like that. So at least you've got, you know, the technical experience behind what constitutes a quote good unquote quilt, you know, from a technical perspective, filled bindings, you know, seams that line up, no big toe catcher stitches on your quilting, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I really think that good technique is important. I think it's important to practice and fix your mistakes if you can't stand them. I'm not saying that you have to have, that everything has to be perfect. I've never made a quilt where every single piece is perfect. But I do strive to get better, and, but some things like, it's a secret. We're only going to find out what a filled binding means if we talk to Pam because she had this lecture at the EastCom Quilter. I mean, that is not fair. Not that life is fair, of course. So.
Now, was that the county fair, or was that a quilt show that you got that feedback?
Every single time I enter a quilt, which isn't very often anymore, I get that. So yeah. I'm like, really? I got to figure this out because I just entered a quilt into PIQF, and usually I don't enter the judging part.
Oh, okay.
And got a letter saying, yay, your quilt has been picked to be judged. And I got into a panic. I'm like, oh no, it's going to be judged. They're going to tell me my binding isn't full. Oh no. But it's too late now. So.
Well, you need to fill it more, feed it more chips and maybe some chocolate. Fill it up.
That is a good idea. I'm going to go and do that right now.
Get some chip wrappers, like the crinkly kind that you would maybe sew into a baby toy, and just put that in there. And then when they go to feel it, they'll be like, what is going on here?
Well, that would be hilarious.
Or put, you know, and make a long, skinny whoopee cushion. Stick it in there. Back to my sound effects here coming up after episode 150. There you go. Ways to give judges hard times. Yeah. We love you, judges. Try not to judge us too much.
Yeah, we do love you. Please tell us what you want.
Yeah, they are the only ones allowed to be the quilt police.
Yeah.
But even that, I mean, they can't go around killing your joy.
No. No. And I'm well known for leaving the envelope on my desk, and then it gets covered with stuff. And then 5 minutes. Or when I'm cleaning off my desk, I'll go, oh, what's this? Because it'll just say, you know, Q8749B or some random number. And then I'll open it up. Oh, this is a feedback from my quilt that I entered 5 months ago. Oh, filled binding. Yeah, that's a problem. Okay.
Yeah, when I did the show for East Cobb this year in June, I had submitted two quilts. One was My Madrona Road, like the Quilter's Week, and the other one was Grandma's Hanky, which was taking Grandma Eddie's old handkerchief. I embroidered her name on it in her own handwriting, and then, you know, I did like quilted feathers, but I had to like mark them all individually, so it was like a big deal to me to like get that stupid feathers done. And I had done it 18 months before I did Madrona Road. And in looking at the technical aspects of my quilting, I had more consistent stitches on Madrona Road, you know, and it just, there was such a difference. And then, but I was like, well, I still really like Grandma's Hanky. And I wanted to have it in the show to maybe inspire other people, because people always get vintage linens or whatnot, you know, and that was a nice remembrance of her and her influence on me and sewing and crafting and all of that. And so I didn't give two figs what the judges had to say about my technical merit, because I'd made it at a time when I was, I was okay at free motion quilting. I'm better now. Right. But then looking at the judging, I was like, well, Grandma, I hope you go haunt these people. I didn't get good feedback. Right. They're like, oh, because I had done like a machine binding for some reason instead of hand binding. Because I don't think I ever planned to enter it in a show.
Well, and you have to do at the time what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, you can't always wait to make the quilt until you get better.
Yeah.
Right then, you made it because that was what was going on with your life. And it probably helped you through a few things. So,
oh yeah, they complained about like the lack of contrast in the values of fabric, because it was a lot of the hanky itself was like a pale aqua on a cream background, and then I had like a McKenna Ryan print with the same kind of aqua and some lavender in it, because you know, she didn't wear a lavender scent, but a lavender scent reminds me of both my grandmothers, even though neither of them ever smelled like it.
Well,
And
and
so I went
that's
with those colors, and they're like, you don't have very good contrast in your fabrics. I was like,
And I would
what?
like to say to all of your listeners that you don't always need contrast in your quilts, as long as it's your intention not to have contrast. So have contrast if you need it and want it, but if you want it to be, like you're saying, remind you of something, use these colors that either your grandmother wore or were in her house or whatever, it's perfectly fine not to have contrast. Think about, I don't know if you guys remember watercolor quilts, but those are not about contrast. Those are about a color wash effect, which is really difficult to achieve. So those kind of comments from judges make me mad because they don't pay attention to the intention of the quilt. And it may be true that you didn't have contrast, but you had a good reason, I think.
Now, I was thinking back to the comment you just made about putting off making a quilt because you think you may not be technically ready to make it. And I'm kind of facing that with a project right now. Because when I took Adita Sitar's class on the Dresden plates, you know, she gave us the pattern that she had designed, which is like Dresden plates mounted on a, you know, background square and set on point, which that's perfectly nice. I don't need another just generic quilt to lay around, you know, my living room and turn into a blanket fort. So I want to take the Dresden plates and turn them into parts of flowers. So some will be full plates, some will be like a quarter plate is like a bud. And then the rest of them, because I'm not going to need that many in the center, I'm imagining it being somewhere 60-inch-ish square. So I'll have that in the center, and then I'll have half Dresdens along a border. You know, I'm going to obviously frame it up with some other kind of border first, and then do like some half Dresdens. And then I keep thinking in my head, what I envision on this quilt is a lot of really dense quilting, like 3/4 inch cross hatching. I mean, that's only straight line quilting, but I still get kind of anxious about doing it because everyone, even when I straight line quilt now, there's like a little wave here and there. I got distracted trying to change a song on my iPod or, you know, have to stop because the cat jumped on it. I'm like, I don't know. Because I haven't moved forward with this quilt because I'm like, I don't know, I might mess up the quilting. Well, I haven't even pieced the dang thing yet. Because I'm
How about
worried
if
about
you
the quilting.
piece it first, and then we can have another conversation about quilting? I think you can handle the piecing, really. And I mean, there are things that you can do to make it straight. And I'm not saying that you would want to do all these, but you could draw the lines on, so you just have to follow. I know you're not going to do that, but I'm just
I
saying
hate
you
drawing
could.
lines, but I feel
I
like I
know.
need to.
You could put tape on, use
Yeah.
a painter's tape. There, my machine has this bar that you
I
attach.
have that too, but mine wiggles
So
a lot.
maybe you need a new one, or maybe,
Think.
no, I'm a big fan of tape. If you tape that sucker on there, it's not going to move.
Yeah.
And then you just take the tape off and use some alcohol or whatever. So you could use that. I mean, there are different, I often use the side of my foot. I
Yeah.
often quilt with just an applique foot because the walking foot, it just makes too much noise. It drives me insane and I can't hear my book when I'm sewing. But I like the size of the applique foot from the needle to the side of it, so often I'll use that as well, okay, I don't quilt that much, actual quilting, but when I do, I mean, I'll often use that. And that's probably too small for the 3/4 that you want, but I mean, it's another idea. But here, start with the piecing, and we can move on from
But
there.
I might mess up 15 steps down the road, Jay. I can't do that. And that's dumb. I mean, to not work on something I know I can handle because I'm afraid I'm going to mess it up. I mean, I went through the same thing putting off quilting beach walk because I was like, I don't know, monofilament. I might mess it up. I should just sit on it for another year. And then finally, I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm doing it. because I want to hang it up.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's just part of the process. And what I do when I get into that is I fret a lot and worry first. Mm-hmm. Then I'll say, okay, what's the first step? Hey, I need to go buy fabric. Okay, I'm going to buy the fabric with Will. Okay, not really, because I have a lot of fabric, so but I'm just okay. So then, okay, yay, I have all the fabric. What do? I'm going to wash all the fabric. Okay, I got two steps finished. You know, and by the time I actually finish the top, I've totally forgotten about whatever worries I had. So.
Yeah, typically what I've done, like when I was stalling on Beachwalk, I made like 5 charity quilts.
And, you know, that's not a bad thing. I mean, at least you didn't drink yourself into oblivion and hug the toilet for 3 days.
I mean, I might have done that, too. I'm just saying. But, you know.
Well, I would never ask you to say that on the podcast.
I would be honest about it, because I'm about the honesty. I did get a comment on Twitter, and I can't remember who. I'm sorry. It might have been Valerie, I think. I had put up, like, actual pant sizes. And it's like, oh, you don't have to tell us that. I'm like, I don't have to. I could be all mysterious and secretive about this whole, you know, being more healthy journey that I'm on, but kind of like not talking about depression, shoving it under the rug, not helping anyone.
Yeah.
So if I went on a bender, you know, I would probably tell people.
Okay, then.
So FYI, haven't ever been on a bender. I'm kind of boring like that.
I think you better put a warning. We talk about drinking and we talk about funerals.
Well, now, so I've made people laugh and cry and get asthma attacks. You know, I'm trying to reach the next level, and I'm kind of tapped out. I don't know what, you know, what else? Shock value? I don't know.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Tapped
out. So how do you get inspired? How do you see, do you just go with fabric or what?
Sort of depends, because, you know, I get very easily influenced by like, ooh, here's a new big thing. You know, when there's like a new quilt along. And I have trouble making a quilt just to, like, say that I made a quilt.
Because yeah, I kind of noticed that.
I like things to have a purpose. And so, you know, I'm like, oh, this looks like the stars around me. I'm like, oh, that looks like a neat thing, and it's a cool pattern. I might like to do it, but I don't know what I would do it for. And I, like, would start pulling fabric from my stash, kind of half-heartedly, like, I don't know. And then I think, oh, I have to make a Christmas quilt for my daughter, and I could probably make it work for that. So that's sort of like I want to call it industrial quilting, where I'm like doing a quilt for a purpose. Mm-hmm. But then there's like the artsy fartsy side, like this Dresden plate quilt, where I'm trying to think of all the elements that I really love about quilts I've seen in the last year, with the focus on complicated, dense quilting and cool applique, and can I put it all together in one quilt? And so that's much more about drawing inspiration from other quilts. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole other, like, even artier and fartier side, if you can believe that, where I've started taking more pictures in the last probably 6 months, because I got a new camera and my other one was kind of jacked up. And so we would go on these nature walks, and I would be taking pictures of my kids or of a leaf, or we're at the beach. And I took this awesome picture of my daughter jumping in the waves. And I'm like, I really want to make that a quilt. I don't think I quite know how to yet, but that's been like, you know, just photographing what's around me.
So here's another thing that I do for inspiration. At Office Max or one of those places where you can buy office supplies, they have these boards. I don't know what they're called, but they're slightly tacky. They're like post-it notes, but so you can just cut out something and stick it on there. And I have one of these that I actually cut in half, so that I have two of them that are long and skinny next to my sewing machine. And whenever I see something in a magazine or sometimes an ad, it's usually not quilts, although some Garnet Hill quilts are up there. Mm-hmm. I stick it on there. I don't need to run around finding the tape or tacks, which the boys have hidden somewhere from me. I just stick it on there and then I can look at it. And so if you do that, or, you know, you can tape it or whatever, then you can put it right by your sewing machine or wherever you work so you can look at it, it will help you to kind of work through it in your mind, I think. It helps mm-hmm. me to work through it because I think, oh, I have one picture. It's a round rug of a vase of flowers with two handles, and then the flowers are all kind of spilling out. And it's one of those sort of punch needle rugs that mm-hmm. was in a magazine. And I keep looking at it going, thinking first, okay, well, I should do this in applique. And then Katie talked about that that technique where you put little pieces of fabric together and then you sew around them.
Yeah, the ticker tape.
Forget what it's ticker tape, yeah. And I thought, oh, I could do that. So until I'm ready to actually get out fabric and do it, it's up there and my mind is working on it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I do is when I'm going to sleep, I'll try and either step through a quilt that I want to make but haven't started or mm-hmm. try and work out a problem in a quilt. And then it kind of gets it in my brain. And sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and go, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing. And then I don't have nightmares either. So quilts aren't good. So just a suggestion.
Yeah, I like the inspiration board idea, which, you know, some might say, hey, have you heard of Pinterest? To which I'd say, yes, I have heard of Pinterest. How many times have you pinned things on there and then never gone back to look at them?
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's not where you can see it.
Yeah, it's not in your face. Like, hey, remember me? You need to turn me into a quilt. Because I have that challenge as well for a quilt that I want to make my dad. Because I'm making my parents a king-size quilt for their bed, and I think, you know, my mom has had in mind that I'll make it next year, but when they come in a couple weeks to visit, we're going to start getting fabric for it. But, you know, my dad had said, oh, I would like a Pike's Peak quilt, because that's, Terry will know where that is. In Colorado, we used to live at the base of Pike's Peak, because my dad was in the Air Force, and we were in Colorado Springs. And, you know, they have gone back several times since then, and he would really like that represented somehow. And I was like, well, I'm not going to make a king size quilt with a big mountain on it. But I had thought, okay, bed runner.
Well, and then, wall quilt might be better just because of the shape of Pike's Peak, but.
Yeah. And I brought that up, but they ran out of wall space because we have, you know, family pictures and all the other, you know, pictures and mementos from all the places they've lived over the years with him being in the Air Force, that wall space is at a premium there. So
yeah, no,
I'm thinking like mountain range.
Oh, that would be good,
you know,
as a bed runner.
As a bed runner.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, do I do like a Bargello look for it? Do I do applique? Knowing, you know, they've got cats like I do and they're going to frolic on it, you know. I don't want it to be too arty to where it's fragile and can't be washed. So, yeah, I'm in that. How do I get the delicacy of the trees and the wildlife that's there and the sturdiness of the mountain brought together in a thing that's not going to be a pain in the butt to wash? So that's what I'm dealing with now.
Well, I think trying things out is good. So let's say you think, okay, I'm going to try out, I'm going to make these trees using pearl cotton in my bobbin. I'm just making up stuff here. I'm not saying this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, try it out on a sandwich, just like you would practice machine quilting.
Yeah.
And see how it works on your machine, if it's, I like to get things done, but it's also a process of trying things out. Mm-hmm. And when you try things out, you go, oh, it's another form of inspiration because you go, this isn't quite working, but if I did this other thing, that might work. And then you try that and, oh, that doesn't work either, but it kind of feeds on it. I think inspiration is a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't look, you're not going to get inspired. And if you don't try things out, you're not going to get inspired to try something else out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you practiced on machine quilting sandwiches, right?
Well.
Okay.
I did once.
You do those cat mat things.
Yes. And that's what my practice pieces are. Typically, if I want to try a new pattern, I will do it on something the size of a fat quarter, but I hate waste. And
yep,
so I will, you know, turn it into a cat mat that then the shelter can sell.
Yeah.
But I mean,
that's perfectly fine. It's not, I'm not saying, you know, make something and then throw it out, but try something, turn it into a cat mat, and give it away.
Because they don't care.
They don't care. And I think with different techniques, especially with embroidery floss or pearl cotton in your bobbin or making delicate trees, you have to try it out. You can't just sit down and do it all perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think. I do anyway. I mean, maybe you're better than I am at that stuff.
Probably not.
Okay, let's move on from that.
So, I feel like we've had a good conversation about inspiration.
Good. I feel like we have too.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, Jay? Other than go buy coffee?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I have to say that one of the things is it's important to do something related to your quilt making every day. If quilt making is a main thing in your life, then do something every day. I've had more than a week of my sewing machine being gone, me being out of town, the cutting table in the fabric closet, and I'm out of the habit, and it sounds kind of frightening, but, and, you know, I'll get back into it, but it's easier if you do a little something every day. Iron one piece of fabric, sew one seam, cut two squares for your mystery quilt. Makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, making things a habit applies to more than just inspiration in sewing.
Yeah. Yeah, like working out, which I also didn't do while I was gone.
I managed to walk like all from Concourse D down to like baggage claim when I got back in town, you know, on my flight back from Ohio. Because I was like, well, I could try and run this afternoon, but somehow just being on a plane exhausts me. So I was like, well, I'll just walk that, you know, half a mile or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I was like, I gotta get some kind of workout in today because it's my habit. And, you know,
and you had to pick up your baggage.
Well, I was hauling it with me. I was one of those obnoxious people that just did all carry-ons.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate it too, but I wasn't going to pay the $25 because the ticket was already super expensive buying it only 2 days out.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. Yeah. I just think they should charge people for bringing it on the plane, not put it in the baggage compartment.
Yeah, you would think.
Because it makes it, they load the plane faster if everybody isn't trying to shove their carry-on in the...
And then the people that are in the back of the plane that shove it on at the front of the plane and take up the... Yeah, that makes me mad. Anyway.
Yeah.
We should probably not talk about that. We'll upset someone.
Yeah, no.
How about we never go anywhere, ever?
Well, I like that. No, I used to travel a lot more for pleasure than I do now, and part of it is because it's pain, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Which is lame, I know, but...
No, that's not lame. That's why I don't... I have to go to this conference for work in October, and I just think, I want to go. I'm going to maybe get on a plane. I have to fly AirTran, so it's like a cattle call. I won't have an assigned seat. It just makes me irritated.
Oh. Well, I don't mind traveling for work because they reimburse me and I can get room service, but... Still, I still have to put up with the people. We're not talking about that.
I'm expected to like go out and socialize. I don't even think they'd let me get away with room service. Why didn't you go out and meet with, you know, because we all work from home. So the point of me going is not only to get this, you know, education from the conference, but also to meet the people that I actually work with.
Usually the conferences that I go to are on the East Coast, which means that all the sessions start at my 5 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
So I don't feel bad about getting room service for breakfast because then at least I know someone will wake me up if I don't hear the alarm.
Yeah, mine is just popping down another state. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that was a happy note.
You have to think of something happy. So tell everyone what you're working on.
Scrapitude. Are you doing that, Jay?
I'm sort of. I cut all of the 2.5-inch squares I cut part of them, and then I found a whole bunch that I'd already cut when I thought cutting up 2.5-inch squares would be a good idea and I could do it. So I have all the 2.5-inch squares, but I have nothing else, so I have to cut. I'm going to be behind. I have to go at my own pace.
Yeah, I got my 25 four patches sewn of like all the medium dark values, and I'm have on the machine right now like the white, because I'm using like white on white prints for my mixed background, and then, you know, I've got those, you know, 112 four patches that I'm working on. I think I've sewn half of seven of those, and that's one of those like, oh, it's gonna take forever. Like, no, I should probably just get my iPod charged and listen to something and do it.
I have to say that for mystery quilts, one thing I would like a lot better is if they wouldn't make you cut everything all at once. If they would say, okay, cut up 2.5-inch squares in background and foreground colors, and then you could sew them together, and then, okay, cut up some of these, because I just have a really hard time cutting a whole bunch of stuff all at once. I get bored, my mind wanders, and I cut wrong, or...
Well, that's why I find I can do the cutting while I've got something else on the machine. So if I get bored with cutting, I can go piece something else unrelated.
Yeah.
Because, yeah,
true.
Cutting all that much. Now, the way Bonnie Hunter does hers, it's sort of you cut for each step. And that sort of aggravated me. Like, well, if I'd known I needed more 2-inch squares, I would have gone ahead and cut them.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I get aggravated both ways, maybe because I just don't like cutting.
Yeah. I'm kind of in that camp also. I don't mind it if I don't have to do a lot of it all at once.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of mystery quilts. I just really want to know what I'm making.
Yeah.
I don't like surprises that much. You know, somebody sends me a pack of thread, I like that kind of surprise. But if I'd known I had to cut more 2-inch squares, I would have just cut them when I did. You know, that, I don't like that. And I don't like it if the quilt turns out ugly because I didn't know I should have used light gray instead of white or something.
Yeah, and I think that's what Sandy ran into when she was doing Easy Street. Like, not quite ideal placement for what she picked.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would really like to know why other people like mystery quilts. That would be a good topic. So people write in, tell Pam in the comments why you like mystery quilts, because Jay wants to know.
I will say, in the defense of mystery quilts and quilt-alongs, there's like two good reasons that I can see. One, the sense of community you get doing it at the same time as other people. That's
yes,
cool.
The Twitter thing is awesome.
Yes.
Even just watching people, oh, I cut all my 5 7/8 squares last night. Yay! That's fun. That is totally fun.
The other thing that appeals to me is because things are set up in steps, there's like so many different things to check off. Like, oh, I finished this step. Check. You know, and it's not, you don't have to wait until you finish the quilt to put one big massive check mark. You get like that little sense of accomplishment when you finish the different steps.
Yeah, that is also good.
Yeah.
That is, and someone else told you what to do, so you don't have to think.
I know. Well, I mean, they just say, oh, quilt is desired. Pick your colors.
Well,
ugh. Great.
Yeah, that, not, I'm not talking about that. They're like, but, cut 384 2.5-inch squares. Okay, I can do that. It, you know, sometimes you're stressed out or for whatever reason, your brain is not working and all you want to do is just sew four patches together and cut 2-inch squares. And that's perfectly fine. There's all different reasons to quilt and all different moods. Things to sew together in different moods.
Yes. Sometimes you're in a complicated curved piece sort of mood, and sometimes you just want to sew squares together.
That's right.
Now, you know, when I started this podcast, it was because I was going to prove to everybody how awesome it could be if all you did was sew squares into quilts and you didn't have to do anything fancy like triangles.
Mm-hmm.
And then here I am 3 years later. And nope. Squares are boring.
Well, but one of the great things is I was looking at a quilt that I made for my grandmother last week when I was there, and there it's all 9 patches, and it's not that many. It's maybe 16 9 patches that I got in a swap 1,000 years ago. And it's pretty interesting to see all the different ways you can put a 9 patch together just using foreground and background.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the theme might have been florals because there are a lot of florals in those 9 patches. And I was thinking of you, actually. I was thinking, huh, I wonder if Pam has done this. And so there is something to be said for squares. But I have to say, if you add some triangles in, you can do a lot more interesting stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Which you've done.
I have done.
You're okay with triangles now, which is good.
I can be one with the triangles. Now, Morelli has just gotten in my lap, and I don't know if anyone can hear him purr. I kind of doubt it. He's very quiet. He's not as loud as Zapper was.
I can't hear him.
Okay. Well, he's being all dramatic and looking off into the distance.
You're drama king.
Yes, but it is the Fred-iversary, adopt-iversary, everything-iversary this week. So, huzzah! Cats dog for 1 year we've had this crew.
That's a big day.
Yeah.
That was a crazy week last year, as I recall.
Yep.
All the cats in the bedroom and Fred from the airport and...
Yeah, nuts. Oh, and here comes Nina making an appearance. In stealth mode, of course.
Of course.
Well, this has turned into cat narration by Pam. Look, I cannot have two cats on my lap at the same time, especially when one is almost 14 pounds. Morelli's just like, why are you moving in my space, Nina? I got here first. All right, now he's taking off. All right, hooray! No more cats. So, I think this is an excellent note to wrap it up on. Happy adoptiversary.
Happy adoptiversary to you and your family.
And very exciting to come up on my 3-year podcastiversary. Next week will be just me again because I'm fun like that and want to hog the glory all for myself. And I have an idea for who I want on the 150th episode, but I don't know if I can make it work. So that will just remain a mystery until 150. But thank you, Jay, for joining me. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we could make...
Oh, thank you so much. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was glad we could make it work because I know, you know, East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, I know you really wanted me at 5 a.m., but just couldn't make that work.
You're cramping my style, but I'm going to let it go.
I hope people aren't upset that you didn't post at O Dark 30.
Oh, well, they're still riding on getting one Monday.
Oh, but that's true. That's true.
So, yeah,
I really enjoyed myself. Great conversation, I think.
Yeah. So we're going to leave it at that. And I hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll talk to y'all later. Quilt long and prosper.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
Some of the music from this podcast comes from Mivio's Music Alley. The opening music is Square Peg by the Gentlemen Callers. Find more music at music.mivio.com. To find out more about the podcast, visit the website at www.hiptobeasquarepodcast.com. You can contact me, the head rhombus, by emailing info@hiptobeasquarepodcast.com, leaving a comment on the website, or by following me on Twitter at PantsFreesia. You can also find me on Pinterest and Flickr as PantsFreesia. And don't forget, it's hip to be a square.